Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Dr. Jeffrey Chadwick is a New Testament scholar at BYU. In our next conversation with him, we'll find out that he's done a lot of research on when Jesus was born. Was it December? He thinks so. How does he come up with that conclusion? We'll talk about that in our next episode, and we'll also dive deep into the census on Luke 2. Check out our conversation. I also want to remind you, it's just a few days before Christmas. We've got a sale on all of our Christmas books, or not Christmas books, but books on for Christmas here over the next few days. So please, that offer ends on Christmas Day. Please buy those now. Go to our Amazon page and you can get those for half off. And so anyway, it's just Merry Christmas. Now back to our conversation. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm really excited to have a New Testament scholar. Could you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Jeff Chadwick. I do work in the field of New Testament studies as well as biblical archaeology, teaching in the land of Israel and here in the United States. And it's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, thanks. So I understand that you spend a lot of time in Israel.
I do, yes.
Aren't you the director of the Jerusalem Center?
I am not the director of the Jerusalem Center and never desired to be, but I am a faculty member with the Jerusalem Center and have been for 35 years.
Wow.
We don't keep permanent expatriate staff in Jerusalem. We rotate, but there are several at BYU that have contracts, actually, that are with the Jerusalem Center. I'm one of those, and I also have a home here on the Utah campus here in the College of Religious Education. So I spend time between the Holy Land and Utah, teaching for Brigham Young University, and also I'm a professional field archaeologist, so I also am a longtime senior staff member of one of the major excavations in Israel.
All right. Are there any excavations you're working on right now?
I am currently and have been for almost 20 years affiliated with the Tel Safi Gath archaeological project, which is affiliated with Bar-Ilan University in Tel Aviv in Israel. And Gath, as it was known biblically, was the hometown of Goliath.
That's what I thought.
The glandular freak whom David dispatched. And so I excavate there every summer. And we, in fact, have not found Goliath. We don't expect to. But it was the biggest city in the Holy Land during virtually all of the Iron Age, bigger than Jerusalem when Jerusalem was the capital of Judah. So
wow.
It's a huge site, and it's been a delight to be affiliated with that organization.
Well, that's really interesting. I'm actually here to talk about the New Testament. But since you mentioned that, one of my big interests is, you know, I believe, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I don't have the scriptures down. I'm sure you do, though. But in one place in in Samuel, I think it says that David killed Goliath. And in another place, it says Elhanan.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit to that controversy?
Well, I think what you have in the name Goliath is probably a family name, a family that would have been famous warriors in general, and that David killed one and Elhanan killed another.
Oh, okay. So Elhanan...
I don't see that there's a dispute, really, for Samuel.
Okay. So we still think that David killed the big, tall guy?
Well, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't speak to the breadth of biblical scholarship because there's nothing like consensus on the issue. But all of the evidence that I see in terms of the Hebrew Bible suggests to me that the story of David and Goliath is focused on that event, and that there are other events and other Philistine warriors that would have had their other opportunities.
Okay, because I've heard some people say that they think that David took that legend or that myth, or I don't even...
Or that it was transferred from one person to another.
Exactly.
And I don't see that really as a necessary way of understanding the text. But it is. It's a matter of whether you accept the text or whether you think that the text is not reporting accurately. And that has always been the issue in biblical studies, is can you trust this text?
So you think that Elhanan might have killed a different family member in the Goliath family?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's how you reconcile that. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
And since they were all rather big, according to the biblical text, there's no dispute there either. Okay. They're both giants.
All right. Well, cool. Well, we're just, I think we're 12 days out from Christmas. And so my purpose in talking to you, I know you wrote a BYU Studies article about 8 years ago, I think it was.
It was in 2010, December of 2010, the article appeared, dating the birth of Jesus Christ.
All right. So when was Jesus born?
Well, the data that we have that are connected to what we call the Christmas story, both from the texts in Matthew, the texts in Luke, the associated texts in Josephus that talk about Herod the Great, and for us as Latter-day Saints, the Book of Mormon, all of the evidence put together from those texts suggests to me that Jesus was born late in the year 5 BC, actually in early winter of 5/4 BC. So for us, that essentially means December.
Okay.
December of 5 BC.
December of 5 BC. So how do you arrive at such a precise date there? And why 5 BC and why not, I guess there's no year zero, 1 AD as, who was the Catholic guy that came up with the calendar?
Well, Archbishop Usher of Ireland actually came up with that nice calendar that lacks a year zero. So you have 1 BC and you go to AD 1.
Right.
As for why, well, here, of course, I'm advertising. You can get the article at BYU Studies. It's a download. It's not expensive at all, and it's rather involved. So if you want all the evidence, sometimes it's better to read it than hear it stated. Mm-hmm. But there are three or four important historical markers that you have to deal with when dating the birth of Christ. And one, primarily, is that the Book of Matthew asserts that Herod the Great, the king of Judea on behalf of Rome, was alive at the time that Jesus was born. Wise men come to the east and ask him, where is the child that's born king of the Jews? This, of course, is in Matthew 2. We can say with virtual historical certainty that Herod the Great died in April of the year we know as 4 BC.
4 BC.
4 BC.
Okay.
Therefore, Jesus has to have been born before April of 4 BC because he has to have been born when Herod was still alive.
Okay.
And that's the first place that you start in terms of matching history to the biblical text.
So
by the way, virtually all of my colleagues, including some of my colleagues with whom, you know, we've debated roundabout on these issues, Professor Thomas Wayman, Professor Lincoln Blumel, we all agree Herod died in the spring of 4 BC and Jesus has to have been born prior to that.
So why did the and I'm going to blame it on the Catholics, and hopefully that's a correct
Oh, no, this all goes down way before our Catholic friends.
Why did they get that calendar wrong?
That calendar was already in the Middle Ages, 4 years off, just because of a simple clerical error. It wasn't anyone intending to misrepresent history. It was a math error.
Okay.
But the year that we would call, year one, is really about 5 years too late in terms of how we date Christian history.
Okay.
So Jesus is born in December of 5 BC, and he's not born in any year zero, which is what you see them punch into the flux capacitor on Back to the Future. They put in December 25, 0000, but there's no year zero, so that would take you nowhere, even if you could fly through time. And then the question is, which year either side of the non-year zero is it? Is it in 1 AD or 2 AD? Is it 1 BC or 2 BC? Latter-day Saint feeling has been for about a century now, since the appearance of Elder Talmage's great book, Jesus the Christ, that Jesus was born on April 6th of 1 BC. And this was Elder Talmage's assertion from his exploration of the scripture text. He didn't really use historical texts in making that determination. He used an interpretation of Doctrine and Covenants, Section 20, When you look at the historical texts that can be related to the New Testament, it just doesn't work. Jesus can't have been born as late as 1 BC. And there is no year from 7 BC to 1 or 2 AD in which Jesus' birth can have occurred in April. So then what you do, once you've ruled out what can't be, you start to look for what can be. And it turns out that not only in terms of the information that Herod was passed away in the spring of 4 BC, when you add three or four other variables to that, you come up with a very narrow window at the end of the year we know as 5 BC for Jesus to have been born.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So let me ask you a couple of questions. It seems like, if I remember right, it's in Luke where we have the census, right?
Well, it doesn't say census. It says registration.
Okay.
In Greek.
In Greek.
Yeah. And
we're talking about different versions of the Bible. Because in the King James, doesn't it say census?
Yeah, but King James is a translation of the Greek, and it doesn't say census there. It says enrollment. Let me just see and pick it up there. But the idea that it is a census is something that, you know, has bounced around 20th century scholarship. But I don't feel that what was happening there was a census in the word that we're used to it.
All the world should be taxed.
Right, tax. It's a taxing. This taxing first occurred, says Luke 2, when Cyrenius, or as we would call him, Quirinius, was the governor of Syria. Well, the word taxing here in your King James Version, if you're using a nice LDS edition, if you go down to the footnote, you will see that the word taxing is called enrollment.
Okay.
It's not the word census that is used in that Greek alternative. It's enrollment. And what this was, in reality, was a city register. If you've lived in America, you've never had to enroll. But if you go to any city in Europe, I served in Germany, for example, if you move to a city, you have to register with the government for that city to let them know you're moving there and will be a citizen of that city. If you leave that city, you unregister, and the new city you go to, you register in. And this is a European tradition that comes clear from the Roman Empire, the idea of enrolling in a place where you live and enrolling somewhere else when you move to a new place. So in the Roman period, you had this process that Augustus Caesar had essentially instituted that people should have to be enrolled or registered in any place where they lived in the empire. Now, the reason for this ultimately was taxation, because that's the reason for a census too, right? Mm-hmm. Anytime the government counts you, it's because it wants your money. But what it wasn't is Joseph and Mary having to go to Bethlehem to pay their taxes. Rome didn't operate that way. And the old story that Jews were an exception in the Roman Empire and that they were allowed or accommodation had been made for them to go to the city of their forefathers to pay taxes is ludicrous speculation on the part of anyone who's ever said it. It's not real. It never happened that way. No one would collect taxes by that way, by saying, we'd like you to travel 300 miles to the place where your ancestors lived and pay there. First of all, there would have been virtually no compliance with that. Okay, people would have found a way to not have any place where their ancestors had lived. And what we know from history is that Rome didn't collect taxes itself in Judea that was run by Herod. Herod collected the taxes, and he collected them locally. And then he paid the percentage that Rome demanded, but he kept what there was. And this is the way it worked in the provinces, okay? So there weren't Roman soldiers in Bethlehem standing there at a table for Joseph and Mary to pay taxes to, okay? Because they didn't go to Bethlehem to be taxed. They went to Bethlehem and enrolled there. And the reason they enrolled there is because they were moving there. And the reason they were moving there is because when Mary had become pregnant, in Nazareth, and when it was found out that she was pregnant, and the angel also revealed to Joseph that she was not a bad girl, but a very good girl, and would give birth to the Son of God, and he, Joseph, should marry her, and that her son would be the Messiah, well, any Jew would have known just from synagogue learning that the Messiah was expected to be born in the city of David's birth, Bethlehem. So what Joseph and Mary actually did was not move to Bethlehem because they were forced to or were victims of circumstance that during her pregnancy the taxes came due and they had to go there. They moved to Bethlehem on purpose to establish residence there so that her child would be known as being born in Bethlehem. And that's what Luke 2 is telling you they did. They left Nazareth and went to Bethlehem in Judea, okay, and enrolled. They registered there. So and then her child was born.
So there wasn't this grand census that...
No.
Quirinius or Cyrenius?
No. No. And in fact, there was a specific census that was taken in the lands that Herod had governed after his death. But not only after his death, it was after his son Archelaus was deposed in the year 6 AD. Quirinius, the proconsul of Syria, took a individual counting of assets in Judea so that those areas could be broken up. And specifically Judea and Samaria would be now taken over by a Roman governor. Okay? And the Roman governor, as opposed to a client king like Herod, would have a different obligation in terms of taxing revenues that were due to Rome. So that Pontius Pilate, for example, operated in terms of taxing Judea and Samaria differently than Herod Antipas operated in taxing the Galilee. But in the year 6 AD, Quirinius did have a limited enrollment of Judea-Samaria, but not of Galilee, because Galilee was not part of what Archelaus had governed. Okay, so that, but that's 10 years after Jesus' birth.
Exactly.
Okay? And what it says in Luke 2 is remarkable. It says that, let me just go back here because I think I closed it prematurely. I'll read it out of the King James Version and then I'll retranslate it if I could for the audience here. It says here in verse 1, it came to pass, there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. No, that the whole empire should exercise enrollment.
Okay.
Verse 2. And this enrollment decree was first made when Quirinius was governor of Syria. Now, actually, the word there, proto, can mean first, but it also more likely means before. This enrollment decree was before the census of Quirinius. Okay? Quirinius's census was in AD 6. That's too late for Jesus to be born, and it's too late for the episode of Mary and Joseph. And that's what scholars of our always argued about.
Yeah, because okay? I've heard there's kind of a 10-year window where it's possible Jesus could have been born.
If that's the only issue, there would be, but that's not the only issue.
Okay.
And in fact, it's way too late for any reasonable time that most scholars believe Jesus was born, because this would be 10 years after the death of Herod the Great. And remember what the scriptures insist on in Matthew 2. Is that Herod was alive.
So do you kind of have to choose between Matthew and Luke as to who's more accurate there?
Not at all. All you have to do is look at what the Greek says. This enrollment was before Cyrenius was governor of Syria, okay, or Quirinius. So this general enrollment diktat was in place before Quirinius' limited census of Judea-Samaria in 6 AD. That's all that's saying.
Okay, so are we talking about two different countings then, or I don't know?
No, we're not. We're not talking about two different countings at all. There was only one census, and Quirinius took it in 6 AD.
Okay.
And it was only of Judea and Samaria. But the decree of Caesar Augustus was that everyone in the whole empire should be enrolled. And that was a general enrollment in your locality. Okay? So it goes on to say in verse 3, everyone went to be taxed to his own city, which means everyone enrolled in their own municipality, in their own area, right?
Okay.
Now, it doesn't say anything about going to the city of your ancestors there. It says you were enrolled in place. If you lived in Jerusalem, you were enrolled in Jerusalem. If you lived in Nazareth, you were enrolled in Nazareth. If you enrolled any place else, if you lived any place else, that's where you enrolled. Verse 4 goes on and says, Joseph went up out of Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, to Judea, the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. Now, people have assumed from that he went to pay his taxes there because that was the city of his ancestors. But actually, what this is simply saying is that the Messiah to be born would have to be born in the place where the lineage of David was counted to, it wasn't that Joseph went to Bethlehem to pay taxes there. He went there to be enrolled, and he went there to be enrolled because his heritage as a descendant of David would be the genealogy that Jesus would inherit, because he would be identified as Jesus' father. Now, even though he wasn't really Jesus' father, the text treats him as Jesus' father. The genealogy in Matthew is the genealogy of Joseph, Matthew 1. The genealogy in Luke is the genealogy of Joseph. Some manuals say it's the genealogy of Mary, but the text says it's the genealogy of Joseph in Luke. And given,
Joseph, the father of Jesus, not Joseph of Egypt.
Not Joseph of Egypt.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you have a question between manual and text, you choose the text. That's how I work on it. So there isn't a genealogy of Mary.
Are you saying we have bad manuals?
Well, I'm just saying that we have sometimes looked in 19th century Protestant commentaries for our guide, when really we would have been best to stick to the text.
I'll agree with you there.
The Protestant commentaries of the 19th century couldn't reconcile Matthew's genealogy of Jesus to Luke's genealogy of Jesus, so they simply invented the idea that Luke's genealogy must be the genealogy of Mary. But it's not. It says it's the genealogy of Joseph, specifically.
So why are there differences?
Because everybody has different genealogy, depending on whether you go through grandma's line or grandpa's line.
Okay.
that's the easiest question for a Latter-day Saint to answer that there is,
Okay.
If you actually think in those terms, in the same terms that we look at genealogy, it's very complex.
Okay.
And sometimes lines go back and then they intersect time and time again too, as both of those do.
Okay.
But getting back to what we were talking about, the reason it says here that he goes is verse 5, to be taxed, to be enrolled with Mary, his espoused wife.
Okay.
And so they become enrolled as citizens of Bethlehem, because you didn't go there just temporarily and enroll. You enrolled because you were moving there, and then Jesus is born. It came to pass, the days were accomplished, she'd be delivered, she brought forth her firstborn son. And Jesus then was meant by them, the move was purposeful to Bethlehem, they meant to fulfill the prophecy of Micah 5:2, that, the king of Israel should be born in Bethlehem.
Okay.
And so they moved there with purpose. And had later circumstances not intervened, he would have grown up as Jesus of Bethlehem.
Instead of Nazareth.
Yeah. Now, by the way, remember in the Matthew story, once they come back from Egypt, once Herod the Great is dead and the danger is over, they want to go to Bethlehem. But they're warned by the angel not to, because Herod's son, Archelaus, is crazier than Herod was and dangerous. So they go to Nazareth as the backup plan. And Jesus becomes known as Jesus of Nazareth instead of what Joseph and Mary had intended, that his birth town be known as Bethlehem.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Jeff Chadwick. We're going to jump back to Thomas Wayment, and we'll talk a little bit about the Magi. Were they revered by ancient Jews?
The reason that we think they're Zoroastrian is that word Magoi does appear in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, and it refers to people from that area. And the fact that we are calling them Magoi, magicians is the modern word, but we favor wise men, is not a positive term. So the modern reader sees these as a positive moment in the story, but if they were appearing in Jeremiah, who uses the word, I believe it's Jeremiah, he uses it very negatively. These are people that are kind of outside of Israel, they're condemned, etc.
If you're interested in a transcript of this conversation, we'll have it out shortly at our Amazon page. Or, if you'd like to subscribe for just $10 a month, I'll be the first to send it to you so you can get a head start. If you'd like to hear more about this conversation, please subscribe on our Patreon page at patreon.com/gospeltangents. For just $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview uncut. Also, for our latest updates, go to our facebook.com/gospeltangents page, and you can get those updates as well. Also, we're on Twitter at gospeltangents, so you can see those updates. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Be sure to subscribe on our YouTube page at youtube.com/gospeltangents. And also, if you'd like to get a transcript of this, go to our Gospel Tangents interview page. But just go ahead and do a search for Gospel Tangents, and you should be able to find our page there. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there, and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.